The time is 1:33, and I call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order. We are in Belts, Room 105, of the Thomas Stewart Building, in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Friday, April 28th, 2023. Members present are Senator Merrick, Senator Bishop, Senator Dunbar, and myself, Senator Bjork. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phone. We'd like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Juliana Singh, as well as our LIO moderator, Sydney Truitt. We have three items on our agenda today. First up is Senate Bill 88, Retirement Systems Defined Benefit Option. Next, Senate Bill 116, Associate and Professional Counselors. Finally, Senate Bill 123, License Requirements, Commercial Drivers. First up, Senate Bill 88, Retirement Systems Defined Benefit Options. At our last meeting, we had a presentation of the draft CESH version /R. As we ended the meeting, I maintained my objection to adopting the CS. At this time, I remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting the CS version /R for Senate Bill 88? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for Senate Bill 88 version /R is before the committee as the working document. Are there further questions from members of the committee? Seeing and hearing none, members have a draft amendment in their packets. Senator Bishop, may I have a motion, please?
Chair Bjork, may I move Amendment R? Period, one, period.
I'll object for purposes of explanation.
This is a technical fix to the DC defined contribution rollover situation to allow transfers to defined benefit. This amendment corrects a technical problem with the bill under both the TERS and PERS systems, section 4 and 55. The bill would allow employees who are hired under the defined contribution plan who left service to come back to work in the future and still choose the DB plan. These employees could elect defined benefit if they didn't cash out their defined contribution accounts completely when they left. Under the bill, if they rolled over their defined contribution accounts into an individual retirement account, they can come back, roll their individual retirement accounts into their defined contribution accounts, and then use those DC funds to buy their service time in the defined benefit plan. So this amendment ensures the situation is possible through minor changes in language and structure of the provisions.
Thank you very much, Senator Bishop. I will remove my objection to Amendment R.1. Is there further objection? Seeing and hearing no objection to the amendment, Amendment R.1 is adopted. Is there further committee discussion or comments from the members about Senate Bill 88? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Senator Giesel, yourself, a number of other folks I know that have done just a tremendous amount of really detailed work on this piece of legislation. It's a defined benefit that is vastly different from our old system. It has a variety of controls to make it practical and beneficial for employees, but also limits risk to the state, and I think will be financially sustainable. So just wanted to say thank you, and hope we get a chance to move this on to finance. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other comments or questions from members of the committee? Seeing and hearing no further committee discussion, what are the wishes of the committee? Senator Bishop.
Chair Bjorkman, I move to report committee substitute for Senate Bill 88, Work Order 33-LS0505/R as amended from committee with the individual recommendations and attached physical note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, CS for Senate Bill 88 as amended is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached physical note. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork.
Conrad.
Back on the record, 141 here in Belch, room 105. Next up, Senate Bill 116, Associate and Professional Counselors. I would like to note for the record that Senator L.V. Gray Jackson is on the phone, listening and participating to this meeting. So, Senator Gray Jackson, anytime that you want to speak, just let us know. Can you hear us?
I can hear you, but I don't think you can hear me.
I can hear you now.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Mr. Okay. Chairman.
You're welcome. Senate Bill 116. This is the first hearing of the bill. With us to present the bill is the sponsor, Senator Kathy Diesel, and her staff, Jane Conner. Mr. Arvidson on Teams, if you could, I think if folks just could mute your microphones on Teams, that would be good. Thank you all. Senator Giesel, Ms. Conway, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 116. For the record, I'm Kathy Giesel, State Senator for District E. That's in Anchorage. Mr. Chairman, this bill creates a new category of behavioral health care clinicians. This is a category that we certainly need more of. So this creates a new associate counselor license type. This change would provide some guidance and support to those who are behavioral health clinicians working toward licensure and encourage continued growth in the field. So the licensed professional counselor associate is a license that would be issued after the person had completed the educational requirements for full licensure as a professional counselor. The person would then complete the required supervision or supervised clinical experience and the exam under a more structured process, Mr. Chairman. It would align Alaska with national standards for professional counseling licensing, and it would ensure appropriate and adequate supervision is being provided as these folks are moving from this associate licensure position into a professional counselor position. 65 states offer this pre-licensing process, and it's overseen by the state boards in those 65% of other states. It streamlines the steps toward obtaining full licensure, and it will increase access by Alaskans to more behavioral health clinicians. There's a couple other things that the bill does. It streamlines the requirements for a supervisor license. So these are the licensed counselors who are now going to be supervisors. It deletes some of the obsolete requirements that we have in law. And in addition, it updates wording and qualifications for the professional counselor license. So lots of different adjustments here in this bill, Mr. Chairman, though it is really a very simple bill. It removes for the professional counselor license the requirement for two letters of recommendation, and also some obsolete wording related to remote location, appropriately substituting the word telehealth. So my staff, Jane Conway, is here to take you through a sectional. And then, of course, we have some invited testimony from licensed professional counselors. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Senator Neisel. Ms. Conway is here to present a sectional. Please begin.
Good afternoon, members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Jane Conway, and I am staff to Senator Kathy Giesel. The sectional for Senate Bill 116, Section 1, amends the statute that governs professional designation requirements, how they can use their title. You know, just puts the policy on what professional title they may use for their field of practice. Section 2 amends the statute that governs duties of the board by allowing the associate counselors to be licensed by the Board of Professional Counselors. Section 3 amends the statute on unlicensed use of title, prohibiting those without licenses to declare themselves as associate counselors. So just making sure everybody uses their right title within that matches their scope of practice. Section 4 amends the statute on qualifications for licensure, and it sets out parameters that the board will set in terms of how many hours they need to be supervised and all the requirements that they would need to be an associate, and then how they would move forward to be a certified licensed professional counselor. Section 5 amends the statute on licensure by credentials. It would allow the board to actually license a counselor from another jurisdiction if the board would find that that jurisdiction had an equal or even higher level of requirements for licensure in that state. Section 6 amends the section on disclosure statement, requiring an associate counselor to furnish a disclosure statement to those patients that he or she would serve with their business address, telephone number, the type of service they're going to provide, et cetera, et cetera. Section 7 amends the statute on grounds for denial of a license or for disciplinary action. It states that the associate counselors may be subject to disciplinary actions imposed by the board if they're incompetent or have committed misconduct or fraud, misrepresentation, or dishonesty in their functions as a licensed associate counselor. They are also subject to disciplinary actions if they assist another person who is not licensed under this chapter. Section 8 repeals a statute about supervisor certification. Section 9 creates transitional language to allow the board to promulgate regulations Section 10 allows those regulations to be promulgated immediately, and the overall bill effective date is set for July 1st, 2025.
Thank you very much, Ms. Conway. Are there questions from members of the committee to the sponsor or Ms. Conway? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this might come up in our invited testimony, but why did you set the effective date so far in the future?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, predicting that this bill got quite a late start this year and then going through next year and getting regulations promulgated. Regulations have been taking 6 to 8 months at least, and so that's why it sets it out to be 2025. And it might have to do also with some other expiration dates of folks' licenses, but I don't know that. We can get that confirmed with our next speaker probably.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair to Senator Dunbar, it is true. Regulation package typically for licensing takes about a year. The public notice, the public hearing, reviewing, the public feedback, it all takes about a year.
Senator Dunbar.
You know, it's fine. I'll wait till hear the invited testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Other questions? Okay. At this time, we will take some invited testimony. First up is Rachel Budding-Young.
Hi, I'm Rachel Budding-Young. I am a member of the State Board for Licensed Professional Counselors and appreciate y'all taking the time to look at this today. This is going to be huge for our field and helping Alaska align with national standards. I did provide a PowerPoint presentation, I believe that you have access to. So this is going to be for House Bill 126 and Senate Bill 116. As mentioned earlier on the next slide, our national trends, 65% of the U.S. states already have a position like this active in their states. This is all going to be like a pre-licensing license, and every state titles them a little bit different. Some people call them associates, trainees, provisionals, interns, and conditional. Most of them have gone with associate, which is why, as a board, that's what we elected also to use for Alaska, just to continue that continuity. On the next slide, it'll show you. It's going to ensure professional, trained, and supervised counselors are assisting the needs of Alaska residents. It's going to create standards of practice for our state. It's going to maintain national standards and provide guidance and accountability for new counselors. Currently in the state of Alaska, when a counselor graduates with their master's degree, they have hours that they have to accumulate under a supervisor. And then they have to complete paperwork, get letters of recommendation, and also pass examinations. Right now, that takes about an average of 2 to 3 years to complete. But for those 2 to 3 years in the state of Alaska, those clinicians are kind of in no man's land. There's not a board governing them. There's not guidance except for through supervisors. And that can sometimes even be difficult because as people move supervisors or supervisees, it creates additional issues. By having this license, it will give them more of a guidance, more accountability, more structure on how they can get it and accumulate everything they need. It's also going to assist with more transitional pieces as we look at that being more popular. So the state will have more of a handle of how many counselors are going to be licensing, having that coming up for full licensure. Right now, if you ask me how many people are going to be licensed, newly licensed in the next year, I wouldn't be able to give you that information because we don't have any way to even articulate that or to account for it. So this is going to help really keep tabs on what is going on and how can we help our community. If you go on to the next slide, this is just an example of the different types of titles that are across the United States: provisional, licensed professional counselor, licensed clinical professional counselor, intern. We have chosen the associate counselor title. So when you go on to the next slide, it talks about what is needed to become an associate counselor. So they would have to have 2 letters of professional recommendation. They must be at least 18. They can't be under any investigation, no previous suspended license, and they must have completed all of the education requirements. And these would all also be what is now needed for an LPC, a licensed professional counselor license. All of those are needed in addition to, so we're setting them up for getting their full license and helping them do this in stages so that they can fully get licensed. On the next slide, you can notice once they have completed everything under the associate counselor license, and that would be including their hours that they needed, then they have to submit their exam scores, show that they have the 3,000 hours of supervised experience, and they have to be under a supervisor the entire time that they have this license. So that also gives that additional supervision and help to make sure that they get the guidance that they need as new counselors. So the benefits for Alaska. It is going to streamline this process to getting licensed. We have a lot of people that after they graduate never go to full licensure. They kind of just get stuck out there. And so this is going to help move them through that process and get them where they are licensed in the state of Alaska, which is huge because that it impacts the quality of care that Alaskans are receiving. It's going to provide clear guidelines. It's going to give regular reporting measures. It's going to support with supervisor changes. And as we talked about, that also includes with that mobility aspect of it. It's going to give a state recognized level of care. It's going to enhance professionalism, maintain national standards, and therefore it's going to have better care for all Alaskans. And then that's all of my presentation. So if you have questions or if you'd like to go to the next invited testimony.
Thank you very much, Rachel, for your testimony. Next up under invited testimony, Joshua Arvidson. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation. Mr. Arvidson, do you have testimony that you would like to give to the committee at this time?
Yes, I would. Sorry for the issue. I logged into Teams twice, so no I'm worries. Back in. Can you hear me okay, sir?
We can. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Okay, thank you. I would like just to introduce myself really quickly. My name is Joshua Arvidson. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at Alaska Behavioral Health. We are the largest outpatient behavioral health provider in the state of Alaska with approximately 250 employees, and we served about 5,500 Alaskans with behavioral health services last year. I've been a licensed clinical social worker and a supervisor, board-approved supervisor for LPCs in the state of Alaska for approximately 15 years. I strongly support this proposed legislation. I would like to bring one item to your attention. That's very specific to the problems that the lack of an LPC associate license in Alaska creates. When we are training clinicians in the postmaster's phase of their career and they're working towards the terminal LPC license, which is the term of the license in that field, in that discipline. We are also training providers and getting them credentialed in evidence-based treatments. Those evidence-based treatments are really critical because they are the gold standard for treatment in our field. And we train providers in nationally established methods for example, trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a frontline intervention for children who've experienced trauma. It was originally designed for children who've experienced sexual abuse. It also works for children who have experienced other types of trauma. Our clinicians are able to complete the requirements for being credentialed as a trauma-focused CBT therapist within about a year. The problem is that while our clinicians who are on a track to become LPCs are in that sort of no man's land that Ms. Boudin's testimony spoke to, they're not able to complete that credentialing process in that evidence-based treatment. That creates a big problem for us. And the reason I highlight that I'm also a licensed clinical social worker is that I also supervise clinicians working towards that license. In our system at Alaska Behavioral Health, the majority of the mental health professionals that we employ and the majority of the services that we provide are master's level therapy services. And approximately half of our workforce are LPCs or working towards LPC, and approximately half of our workforce are working towards licensure as a licensed clinical social worker. In Alaska, there is a license that would be equivalent to the LPC associate license for social workers. That's called an LMSW, licensed master social worker. Because our social work track clinicians are able to obtain that licensure, they can get credentialed in these evidence-based treatments earlier than our clinicians who are working towards an LPC. That's a problem for us because the two tracks are comparable in our system in terms of the services that they're able to provide when they obtain licensure. And so I can see the impacts of not having the LPCA available in Alaska on a day-to-day basis because our clinicians can't get credentialed in the evidence-based treatments that we need to be able to provide. This creates several problems. One is it's a workforce development barrier for our LPC track clinicians. It also creates concerns for me from a patient perspective because our clinicians in that track are not able to get credentialed. If you search for a trauma-focused CBT clinician in Alaska, you're not able to find them on the national registry. One might ask, well, why is this the case? And the reason it's the case, and I've spoken to the developers of some of these evidence-based treatments, is they want to make sure that if they're going to list you on their roster as a nationally certified clinician, they want you to be accountable to a licensing board. And so this no man's land creates a problem for them, and I understand their perspective. And that kind of brings just the second point I wanted to wrap up my testimony with, which is this no man's land creates a concern for me from a patient protection perspective. And that is it creates a situation where we have practitioners that aren't fully under a licensing board in the same way that a fully licensed LPC would be. And that's a concern for me because being under a licensing board provides patient protections. It provides a place where complaints about malpractice or other concerns, which are rare, but they do happen, can go. And that's why these national registries for credentialing for evidence-based practices won't roster clinicians who aren't under a licensing board. So I'll conclude my testimony by saying that I strongly support this change in legislation. I think it will improve our workforce in Alaska, and workforce is the biggest challenge that we have in addressing the mental health needs of Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Arvidsson. Up next, Dory Hagen.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate. Can you hear me okay?
We can, Dory. Welcome to Senate Labor and
Commerce. Thank you. Thank you. I'll introduce myself. I have the opportunity to serve as board chair on the Board of Professional Counselors Board. And I am a licensed professional counselor myself, operating, serving clients through private practice. And I'm also have the opportunity to serve under SEPRI Alaska as a mental health clinician, part-time as well. And I'm a board-approved supervisor. So I'm going to speak a little bit more from the board-approved supervisor perspective, a supervisor perspective. And I just wholeheartedly support SB 116. I just have appreciated so much how Rachel has just championed this bill and just the passion that she has to serve this state and bring this up to national standards. I appreciate the professionalism that can come with this passing of this bill and having the associate counselor's license. I like the description of no man's land because that's what it feels like. I remember feeling that way just as a master's level clinician working towards my hours. I just remember just feeling, well, now what? Well, what do I do? Okay, let's see. You know, there wasn't a clear plan as well as, you know, I hate to admit it, but it's true. Even statutes and regulations, not having a clear understanding really of what those were or what they're about, because I don't have to worry about that too much because I'm sure my supervisor has it. And so I just could appreciate, I'm a rules follower. And so I love that idea of being able to have, okay, here's the clear pathway towards licensure. Here it is. I love the structure and that it's clear for the person who's getting their license, that pathway, as well as for the supervisor, because they both know what the plan is. And there's this clear direction. This is where we're going together. And just to be able to continue to provide best practice for the clients from the supervisor and from the supervisee, you know, having, you know, shoring up everything for them. It's kind of like, you know, tennis shoes that are loosely tied. It's, you know, we're just going to tie those things up. We're going to double knot them so that, you know, to just secure your steps so that you can go this pathway towards licensure well as keep you from maybe stumbling or tripping over ethical issues or other things, regulation or statute issues that maybe you're not aware of. So anyways, hopefully that all makes sense to you. One more thing. I really love the portability piece also, because I know for myself, there's a couple counselors in the lower 48 that over the last couple of years would have loved to come and join our state serving this profession. And because they hadn't quite, you know, finished their hours yet, you know, we're highly recommended stay where you're at and then come up afterwards. And so I love the idea of if someone's ready to come and join our state and be of service here for our clients here, that they could do that sooner. So I love that aspect as well. So I think that's all I have to share for today. Again, completely support SB 116. Thank you for hearing my testimony, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the Senate, and Rachel. Appreciate you.
You're welcome, Ms. Hagan. Thank you for your testimony. Next up under invited testimony, Elaine Border. Ms. Border, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
We can.
Thank you, distinguished members. I really appreciate this opportunity and this invitation to speak into the quality of the mental health care in our state of Alaska. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, born and raised here, now own the second business here, so I really have a heart for our state. I am an LPC, and I'm an LPCS with 10 years of experience in the mental health field. I'm a supervisor, and I own Border Counseling Services, which is a mental health clinic here in Anchorage that serves individuals, families, and children. We do therapy, and we have an on-site psychiatrist, so we do psychiatric evaluations and medication management. We provide parenting classes and family therapy. In my previous life, before I became a therapist, in my first career, I actually owned a medical insurance billing business. And I did billing. I'm a software biller and helped people with billing for 14 years. I'm also a board member of Aquila, and I serve on the program committee ensuring program effectiveness and compliance. I am all for this bill also. I'm going to highlight a few things everybody else has said just to say that I also was one of those people I worked with at Anchorage Community Health, Alaska Behavior in my no man's land days to get all my hours and in my LPC. So I just want to support what Joshua said because I was that when I was getting my hours. But I like to add two big points here. That for supervisors, and I want to also confirm what Dory said. I've interviewed many people to come to work in my practice, and people from out of state can't come here because we do not have that licensure. And I've done the same thing that Dory said, to stay there, finish up, and come up. So it's going to actually allow people from the states to pursue being in our state, which I think is a very, very important piece. It is going to create accountability. I want to really highlight the accountability piece, because a person right now without this can go and start a practice and put out their shingle and start a business, and they can start treating people without being supervised. It does keep people. I know people that have not finished their licensing hours because they can't find supervisors and they can't do these things, but yet they are still treating people. So, and I love the section that they've added in here about making a designation that you actually have to tell people in that your fee disclosures and what kind of practice you have. Without this license, people are currently treating people without those doing those things. And that's kind of scary for the mental health world in private practice. So the other thing I want to really add from what Joshua said, too, is the credentialing piece. Blue Cross of Washington and Alaska, which is 75% of our client base of people who actually come into our office with insurance, have Blue Cross of Washington, Alaska, and Blue Cross will not pay for services without this license. They will not credential them. So that is actually limiting our ability as a private practitioner and a supervisor who wants to mentor people into our mental health world. We can't do it. I can only take Aetna, because Aetna will do this. Aetna will credential people who are in that master's level position, but Blue Cross will not. And with this is going to open our field in a way that I don't know how to actually explain this. And right for Rachel, I'm going to be behind this. You might hear my name and my face again, because we need this so desperately. Once we create this, then the people who are coming out of master's levels, no offense against you, Joshua, but they are limited to go work for one of the machines, with what we call them in this field, that Alaska Behavioral Health, South Central, North Star. They're limited to getting their hours in one of those higher places, which are great places, but it limits the ability to see a bigger, to get trained by other people who are actually in this field and who are supervisors that can go right into private practice. It's a different modality. And this will actually open up the ability for the people who are coming out of master's levels to train in the modalities and the population that they want to train in. Right now, they're limited because we don't have this license. Let me look at my notes here. I think that it's going to create a whole level of an accountability, professionalism. It's going to expand our market that's already struggling. People to get into an outpatient services takes months and months and months on a wait list. And this is going to open up our field in great ways. And it's going to create the level of accountability that we need across the mental health field in Anchorage. I thank you for your time. And I appreciate, I also want to appreciate so much that Rachel has spearheaded this, and the Congress that has already put this before the bill. And I'm highly supportive.
Thank you very much. If you could just state your name and affiliation for the record, and our recording secretary can make sure we have that.
Elaine Border, LPC, and owner of Border Counseling Services.
Thank you very much, Elaine, for your testimony today. At this time, I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 116. Public testifiers will have 2 minutes to testify. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify to Senate Bill 116? Seeing and hearing no one in the room wishing to testify to Senate Bill 116, we'll go online. First up, Lauren Berberich. Lauren's not there. We will move to Kira Lathrop.
Hi, this is Kira Lathrop. Can you hear me?
We can, Kira. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Kira Lathrop. I'm a licensed professional counselor as well as a board-approved supervisor. I am currently serving as an LPC in Skagway, Alaska, at the Dahl Memorial Clinic, and just recently was serving at Bartlett as a supervisor for 12 therapists in various programs. I just wanted to lend my support as well for this bill. It's desperately needed in Alaska. The risks of not having this bill, as everybody has shared, is pretty high. If I could share a brief story, when I was serving at Bartlett, there was an employee I had as an employer. For 10 years, this employee was pursuing licensure. I reached out to the board, and unfortunately, because they did not have this, they could not give me direction on how to manage this. And there was no accountability for this individual. She was practicing under supervision, however, for 10 years. That's quite a while to go without supervision. So this really helps kind of close the gap. No man's land is perfect language to explain where this lands. We really need to tighten this up for the patients we serve, as well as the logistical issues of licensing for credentialing and how people can expand services in an outpatient setting is so important. We know we're in a mental health crisis, but it's just as important that we have qualified individuals that are being monitored appropriately, especially for new clinicians coming out of school that really need this supervision and accountability. If I could just share that, that would be my testimony today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lathrop. Next up, Mary Beth Goodman.
Hi, good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Mary Beth Goodman. I'm the director of the Cohen Clinics here at Alaska Behavioral Health. I'm an LTC. I do rise in support of Senate Bill 116. I'm going to echo what all of my colleagues said and only state new information, and that is I would like to speak specifically to Section 5, Part A. This section reads that the board may issue a license under this chapter to a person who has a license in another jurisdiction to practice as an LTC or ALTC if the board finds the other jurisdiction to be substantially higher or the same level. Quite frankly, the counseling compact is coming for us. I'm a huge advocate of states' rights and a huge believer that we can regulate licenses here within the state of Alaska in an excellent manner. However, presently, it is very difficult for individuals licensed in other states to have reciprocity here. This bill does accomplish this. The difficulty combined with large national companies who are hungry to capitalize on this state make it a very dangerous area. There are several national companies who have already bid successfully on and are here in place through DOD and DOHS RFPs. These agencies are providing mental health care in a state they know nothing to little about. They're hurting our local economies and not doing things as well as Alaskans could, but we are forced to use them because of the difficulty in the licensure process. I can only speak to my experience and the experience of individuals that I hire underneath my care. On average, it takes 8 months for a clinician to receive a license in the state of Alaska. This section of the bill has the potential to serve as a calling card for the reciprocity of other LTCs. The words, the same or higher licensee requirement, is important. I encourage you to look closely at the section and consider adding the following areas so we can avoid having the counseling compact as our only solution. Number one, education. Please consider that experienced clinicians whose degrees may be lacking by today's standards meet the standards when they completed their formal education and allow continuing education units to augment current day educational standards. Experience and on-the-job training, number two. These are invaluable in my opinion, and I urge you to take work history into consideration with regard to reciprocity. The third area is finances. Please consider reducing fees or allowing licensure fees to be waived altogether for out-of-state applicants. The cost of submitting state licensure, verification of transcripts, background screenings, and postage makes licensure cost prohibitive for many. I spent over $500 submitting my requirements to the state in addition to the application fee. And finally, expediency. My personal journey from Alaska license took over 8 months. Keep in mind I was licensed in 9 different states at the time. These 8 months that I could have been helping residents of Alaska in their mental health needs, 8 months I could have been paying state income tax, and 8 months where my family could have bought a home to strengthen the local economy. I feel strongly that quickly establishing licensure for qualified and competent individuals will help solve the mental health crisis here in Alaska. In closing, I would like to say thank you for allowing me to practice mental health counseling in this great state. I love what I do, and I'm privileged to do it, but we have a lot of work to do here in Alaska, but I'm sure you can relate to that because that's what you all are called to do as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Sammy O'Neill.
Yes, how y'all doing? Good afternoon to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Sammy O'Neill. I'm a licensed professional counselor and newly supervised licensed professional counselor in Eagle River, Alaska. I have my own private practice in Eagle River. And I want to thank everybody for the input. Definitely Rachel, appreciate that. She's been working really hard on this. I'm also the vice chair for the state of Alaska as far as licensed professional counselors. And along with what everybody has said, I do believe in that. We need to move forward. I hope we can move forward with this bill. I'm going to speak from what the experience I had and what I've done probably the last couple of months. Coming out of school, I didn't have that clear guidance and everything as well, which I wish I could have had as far as moving in this direction and being a licensed professional counselor and willing to help people in this career field or help clients as well in this career field. I've always been a mentor, retired military as well, so that's another reason why I feel that this bill will help the military personnel or their spouse or their dependents be able to continue to start working as soon as they get here and really learn and understand what is really needed. I didn't have that. What I end up doing now, what I did a couple of months ago, is I started going to the universities just to talk to some of the people that are finishing up their master's degree, because we need to start there to really get them educated in what we need to do and how to handle business coming in this career field. Because we do not want to come in this career field and we putting people's lives at stake, and we don't want to damage or hurt our future clients that we are working with. So I started going to this colleges and just speaking and talking. I've been to a couple of conventions in the lower 48, and a lot of boards are doing this to get a lot of these students or people coming out of college, getting them better prepared to go into this career field, whether it's in private practice or working under organizations, because it's not a book that gets you really prepared for this. So when it comes to the supervision part of this, I think this is what is really needed. So once they step out that door, graduate from college, they have a better idea of the direction they really want to go, what type of theoretical approach they want to use, how to go about doing assessment, how to go about doing the intake, how they really understand the DSM-5, how they do diagnosis. It's a lot that a supervisor can do and provide that for them. So I'm 100% supporting of this, not saying I'm a little biased because I'm on the state board, but also because I'm retired military, and I think this is something we can get behind. And I appreciate the time that y'all have to allow me to speak. And again, I cannot say enough. Thank you, Rachel. You really put a lot of work into this, and I really appreciate it. And thank y'all for having the time to listen to me.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else online or in the room that wishes to testify to Senate Bill 116? Seeing and hearing no one, I'll close public testimony. Are there further questions from members for the bill sponsor? I'd like to set an amendment deadline for Senate Bill 116 for next week, Wednesday, May 3rd, 5 p.m. If you have amendment ideas, please let our office know. We'll set this bill aside and take a brief at ease while we prepare for the next bill. Back on the record, 224 in the Thomas Stewart Office Building. Up next is Senate Bill 123 from the Honorable Senator James Kaufman. Senator, please put yourself on the record and begin your recap of the bill.
Thank you, through the chair. This is Senator James Kaufman, Senate District F, Anchorage. And essentially, this bill removes the requirement that someone hold a license for a year before they're able to begin training as a professional truck driver through an approved CDL truck driving course. And that's pretty much it. I could go on, but the committee has already heard the bill, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Senator Kaufman. Are there questions from members of the committee? Senator Bishop.
I have a question for Mr. Crum, if he's available for questions.
Senator Crum, Mr. Crum, can you hear us?
Mr. Chair, I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hey, Joey, it's Click. I got a couple of questions for you because I missed the bill last week. I think we were in finance. But can an 18-year-old drive pull a set of B trains hauling 166,000 pounds of ore on a federal highway with this passage of this bill?
Through the chair, short answer is no. Even though you can get your CDL in Alaska at age 18, you cannot participate in interstate commerce until age 21. Would need a FMCSA determination if that run from, you know, Tok to Fairbanks is considered part of the process. And I'm going to guess because it's sold on international markets, the answer would be yes. In addition to that, in order to haul a set of doubles or long combination vehicles, it requires additional training and proof of experience beyond getting the minimum CDL.
Follow up,
please.
Yeah, thank you for that. I was reading Section 6 of this Federal Motor Carrier Safety Analysis and Decision, and I was reading down here in 383.3E. It says drivers must operate exclusively over roads that are not connected to the state highway system and are not connected to any highway or vehicular way with an average daily traffic volume count greater than 499. So I think you answered my question. Thank you.
My pleasure, Senator.
Very good. Other questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, at this time, I will reopen public testimony on Senate Bill 123. Last time we had this bill before us, there were technical issues with the phone lines, and we were not able to hear from folks if they wanted to call in. Public testimony is now open. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify to Senate Bill 123? Anyone online that wishes to testify to this piece of legislation? Seeing and hearing no one, public testimony is now closed. Senator Dunbar, do you have an amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair. I move amendment labeled A2 in your packet.
I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment deletes the effective date of January 20th, 2024, and inserts immediately under this provision, should go into effect. And just speaking to it briefly, you'll notice this will become a theme of mine. I prefer to do things today rather than set them off to tomorrow. And I'll say if there are regulations required, and I don't think there are in this case, but if there are regulations required, it doesn't mean we have to delay the statute. Both are required for something to go into effect, and we can change the statute and let the regulatory process play out. But in this case, I think it's fairly straightforward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll remove my objection. Is there further objection to amend A.2? Seeing and hearing none, amendment A.2 is adopted. Is there committee discussion of the bill? Seeing no further committee discussion, what are the wishes of the committee?
I'm sorry. Oh.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to briefly speak in favor of this legislation. I think it's a really positive step forward. I know there are a number of people that want to get into this industry quickly and are being stymied, and so I want to thank Senator Kaufman and his allies for bringing it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Any further discussion? Senator Bishop.
Chair Bjorkman, I move to report Senate Bill 123, Work Order Number 33-LS0721/alpha, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 123, as amended, is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Monday, May 1st, when we will take up House Bill 51 and Senate Bill 116. As there is no further business before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee today, this meeting is adjourned at the dentist's favorite time of day, 2:30.